Welcome into State Your Line, a podcast for Kansas Cityans by Kansas Cityans. We are the Ritz Brothers. Today is March 10th, coming to you live from the Plex Pod Studios, Westport Commons.
Well, not Westport. Live. It's not live.
I'm alive right now, and it's live out of my mouth.
Me and you, it's you talking to me is live.
Yeah. It felt good to say live.
Okay, from the Plex Pod Studios.
Because we've got a couple live events coming up.
Yes, we do.
So that's a teaser.
That's real live.
Yes.
This is the definition of not live, because it's a recording. So we are not coming to you live from the Plex Pod Studios.
Yes.
We are recording.
Recording in the Plex.
Coming to you whenever you want.
But we do have a couple live events coming up we'll touch on just in a second. But first, we got to get to our breaking news, and we have we have a bracket coming out.
It's bracket season.
It is bracket season, and so we thought, what do we know best? What does our listeners know best? And I think it's the best places to drink in Kansas City. So that is how we came to the decision to do the best bar in Kansas City.
Best bar bracket in Kansas City, yeah.
Yes.
This was no easy task. Coming up with these 64 bars.
64.
Four regions and bracket segments. And I really enjoyed the task. I really enjoyed sitting down with you and trying to create the bracket, create the seating for it. It was really fun to do, but I'm worried that it's going to cause stress, cause fights, and get people really upset with us in general.
It will. People will be upset with the seedings, and that's okay.
Yep.
We had an algorithm generate the seedings
for us. Hey, no. What we do is we had a committee. I don't know who's
on
that committee.
I threw it around at bars. I made it bar conversation. Mm-hmm. Threw it out there. We had a committee.
There's a committee. So blame the committee for the seating. Kevin and I can't help you.
Yeah. So here's how it's going to work. You're going to have the chance to vote each round. There are 64 teams. So just like March Madness. And basically we have four different divisions. And we'll talk about them in a little bit. But the first round is going to be from March 10th to March 13th. So that's, you have until this Friday to vote. And then March 13th to Monday, March 16th at 5 p.m. is the second round.
Okay.
So then it'll cut off. So by the time next week's episode airs, we'll have the results of the first two rounds to talk about.
So we are limited by our putting out a show once a week. We wanted to have a couple
rounds to talk about
each time. So it is starting. It's starting before, you know, the big bracket.
Yes.
But the conference championships are this week. It's officially March Madness.
It's officially
bracket season.
It is. The Valley, Mo Valley tournament already started.
Yeah.
So then the Sweet 16 will start March 17th. So when our next episode drops next week, that'll go till the 20th. And then the Elite Eight will be from the 20th to the 23rd. That's a Monday at 5. So again, two rounds in between.
Mm-hmm.
And by the 23rd, two episodes from now, we'll know who's in the Final Four.
Mm. All right.
Then the Final Four will go the 24th to the 30th, so we'll have a whole week for that round. And the championship will go the 31st to the 6th. So those are some of the logistics, get out of the way. We'll end literally on Championship Monday that the NCAA championship's on.
Yeah, and we're going to do a few things. One, we're going to be talking about the bracket and talking about the matchups throughout the podcast, but we're also going to try to get bars involved. So if you have a relationship with one of these bars, or if you work at a bar and you also listen, get your bar involved. We're going to be messaging the bars to tell them about it and to try to get them involved. Mm-hmm. And I think the winning bar,
we're going to have a happy hour there.
At that bar.
Yes.
To kind of celebrate them being the champs. So keep an eye out for those things. But we have some interesting brackets, and we've got some interesting matchups.
Yes,
and
we do.
We've got some stiff competition and some groups of death.
Yes. So what division do we want to start with? We have four divisions.
You go ahead.
Let's start with Let's start with the Waldo Plaza Brookside grouping. So we grouped them geographically.
Yes, Waldo Plaza Brookside.
All right. What matchup are you watching there? What are you liking? I'll tell you what I'm liking.
Okay, yeah.
I'm liking the Peanut versus Brick and Mortar. That's a 1 versus 16 because I just want to see Brick and Mortar get absolutely eliminated and maybe get one or two joke votes. Actually, don't even joke vote them because if too many people joke vote them,
yeah, we don't want that. Win. Why did you even put that idea out there?
So I want to see Brick and Mortar get smashed.
Yeah, Peanut is a strong one seed. I mean, this bracket is stacked because like Charlie Hooper's is a 5 seed or something. That's a great bar, and I love. I think Charlie Hooper's is going up against Monarch Bar on the Plaza. Monarch's the 12 seed.
Very different.
I think that's just hilarious. It just shows, listen, you don't need to spend money. You don't need to be a pricey bar. You just got to be a good bar.
Yeah.
And Charlie Hooper's being a 5 seed going up against Monarch. It's like Charlie Hooper's has dollar beer nights. Monarch has like $15 Manhattan nights, probably.
Yeah. I love, or here's what I don't love. Lose versus Bobby Baker's. 8 versus 9.
Whoa.
I don't want to have to pick it's between
stacked.
The two.
Yeah.
And that's in round one.
Okay.
So difficult decisions right off the bat. So that's that division. A lot of great matchups. What about Westport Midtown division? Again, stacked.
Yeah, stacked. I don't have the bracket in front of me because it's limited.
I
will talk about in general. So before we go too deep, we definitely wanted to pick bars or drinking holes that are more bar than restaurant.
Yes.
So there are going to be a couple of places that we love that are not on this list because they're more restaurant than bar.
Or brewery, distillery.
Yeah, so we didn't include any breweries include and those. Distilleries. And you have to be more of a more drinking than known for your food.
Yes.
And so that's part of the parameters of the group as well. Again, that was the committee's decisions.
The committee.
The committee decided that, and we just have to, Kevin and I have to just deliver that message and go with what the committee says.
Mm-hmm.
So Westport, Kelly's is the one seed, obviously.
Yes.
It will be interesting, though, because I don't go to Ale House a lot. I know Ale House is always crowded, and that's the two seed. So it'll be interesting to see what happens to a two seed like Ale House that maybe I don't go to a ton, but we probably have a lot of listeners that go.
Uh-huh. And I'm putting Harpo's on upset alert. They're the three seed against Buzzard Beach.
Oh.
And all I'm saying is Harpo's is always packed and one of the most popular bars in Kansas City by attendance.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never heard anybody say, I love going to Harpo's.
Yeah.
And Buzzard Beach has this cult kind of feeling around it. Mm-hmm. People are very passionate about it.
Oh, yeah.
Go there. So I'm putting Harpo's on upset alert.
Okay. What's the next region?
Well, I also was going to say this about the Waldo Plaza division.
Okay.
Is that Grand Falloon is a 6 seed.
Mm-hmm.
It could make some noise.
Strong.
It could make some noise.
Strong 6 seed.
Lots of noise.
Those nachos, I just keep thinking about them.
Yeah. Then we have the Outskirts. So this division is, they didn't fall into any of the traditional bar districts in Kansas City. They were on the outskirts of town. So that's how we decided. And Bar K, 1 seed. I mean, wildly popular.
Very popular.
Probably the most gimmicky bar we have on there.
Funky Town is in the outskirts as well.
That's a matchup. Funky Town versus Neon Wild.
That's like a matchup of places not to go during the coronavirus outbreak. I would say the outskirts, this region, is the most unpredictable.
Very unpredictable.
Because I don't know what people favor in some of these outskirts bars, and I could see some having a bit of a close following. But yeah, I mean, like I'm going to be pulling for Sully's. I think they're a 2 seed in the outskirts.
Yep.
I think Sully's could have a chance of getting to the Final Four out of this.
Yep. And then our last division of 16 teams is Downtown, which we included River Market, Crossroads.
Mm-hmm.
It's all right there together. Mm-hmm. Already hearing buzz about this one. 116 or the 1 seed Mosaic. I mean, it is the place of choice for Pat Mahomes, Travis Kelce after a big win.
How can that not
it's
be a 1 seed?
Bumping.
That's what
how many people have a picture with the I love you sign
yeah.
there? It's a one seed.
The committee takes all of that into consideration. Celebrities, popularity, Instagrammable moments, all taken into consideration.
Into the algorithm,
mm-hmm. Yes.
It's 80% algorithm, 20% human.
Okay.
Kind of like the BCS was.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see.
And the quaff is a 16 against them.
The quaff.
Mosaic, upset alert.
The quaff has had some bad press recently. That was taken into consideration.
Yeah,
I'm too. I think the 4C Crossroads Hotel is a sleeper in this region.
I mean, because are we including the upstairs bar in that?
Yeah, that's
part
of it.
I think that's all part of the same building.
Yeah, Crossroads Hotel.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So very strong case for that, too. So.
I also, going back to the Westport one, the Levy's a 5 seed as well.
Yes.
That
make noise,
That
Levy.
Can make noise as well. So I think, you know, Kelly's and the Peanut being 1 seeds are strong.
Mm-hmm. Barquet and Mosaic are the other ones.
Yeah, there's some strong 1 seeds. But I think it's a good balance, and I'm interested to see where it goes.
Where it all comes out, yeah. So again, you can vote once for each round. So we will share the link. You'll click on the link, go out there, click vote now on there, and then it'll bring up each matchup.
It's easy to vote on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to vote on the computer. Vote.
Share it.
Yes.
So that way we can get as many people to participate as possible. It's going to be a lot of fun. So get ready for that. I guess as you're listening to this, it's live.
Go vote. It's live right now.
Go vote. Pause. Go vote.
See, that's why we're not live. That's why you can't say we're live.
Yes. All right. All right. So that is our bracket that we wanted to talk about. I did say we had live events, though.
Mm-hmm.
The Blue Line. I will be hosting.
You will be.
Kansas City Mavericks night at the Blue Line, and I will be interviewing 3 different Mavericks players to go along with that night, which I'm really excited about. Dan, sorry you can't be there.
Yeah, I committed to it. Brian McGannon, who we've had on the show, he's the director of communications. He reached out to us, asked if we could host. I said yes immediately.
Yeah.
Completely forgetting about other obligations in my life. I like to say yes right away to things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I unfortunately won't be able to be there, but as you all know, Kevin knows so much about hockey.
Yes.
And he is a huge Blues fan and Mavericks fan.
Yes.
So Kevin will be holding it down tomorrow.
March 10th. You're lost in it now, too. Today, March 10th, if you're listening to this on the day it drops, March 10th from 6 to 8 p.m., I will be hosting. I will be talking to Rocco Carzo, Lauren Ouellette, and Brian Lemos. Which very excited to talk to those 3 players.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't know a ton about them, but I'm going to learn.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to learn in the next 24 hours.
So
come out, hang out, grab some beers. I think they have like $2 Natty Light Pounders out there. So come hang out. Awesome food, the Blue Line, if you can make it. And then our next live event is going to be March 18th at Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll be hosting Meat Bingo. And the tandem, the tag team, will be there this time.
The day after St. Patrick's Day, we'll be in Kelly's. We'll have Meat Bingo. I'm really excited for that. I'm rehearsing. I've been putting in some work on bingo jokes.
Okay,
so
good.
I'll have those. They'll be awesome. Fresh. But yeah, I'm excited to host. I think I was made for bingo. I'm going to try not to lose my voice because I can get a raspy voice, but I was born for bingo.
Yeah.
Easy to understand.
Mm-hmm.
I can handle that.
Yeah. So it's free to play. Come out. Kelly's March 18th, 7 to 9 p.m. It's free. Bring your friends. We're excited to see you there. So that's all the things we have coming up.
Live events.
Yes.
Coming to you live.
Live events and the bracket. We want to see you guys get involved in. Those are exciting things. And then we are going to jump into openings and closings as we always do. So, what's opening, what's closing, around town, this opening I'm excited for, and I'm getting hungry thinking about it.
Yeah. Johnny Joe's is opening a second quote unquote location.
Yes.
And it sounds semi-permanent. So it's basically a Johnny Joe's food truck that's opening at 1801 Walnut in the parking lot in the Crossroads.
Okay.
But it operates like the other Johnny Joe's. I mean, the other Johnny Joe's is basically the size of a food truck anyways. Yeah. It operates like that in the sense that you can still call for deliveries. They can still make deliveries from that location, not in the truck. That'd be sweet.
Dang, okay.
But just another car. And you can order online and go and pick it up from there, just like carry out. Or, you know, at lunch hour, you can go and pick up a slice from the window of the truck.
Oh, gosh. Because it's great, you know, big buy the slice pizza. If you haven't tried their location on 47th and Holly, is where the original is, and then open it up in the Crossroads. Man, First Fridays, that's where you can find me. Mm. I will be visiting.
I don't know if they're back food with truck. Food trucks are like got suspended from First Fridays.
Well, we'll see.
Maybe that's why they're not calling this a food truck.
Maybe so they're
it's
not.
It's a little life cheat.
All right, so that's some pizza opening. Now we have some pizza, some beef on pizza.
Yeah.
Yeah,
beef on pizza. Is that a staple order from you?
No, I hate Italian sausage. Yeah, ground beef on pizza. I don't really.
This is pizza beef.
Yeah, this is pizza beef.
So Papa Kino's. So I think most of us know Papa Kino's. I thought the original was in downtown Overland Park.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But I don't think it is.
Okay.
Because the original owners of Papa Kino's are they franchised it, and so the. Downtown Overland Park and the Crossroads stores of Papa Kino's are owned by the same franchisee.
Okay.
And they are getting sued by the original owners of Papa Kino's for breaking some sort of contract in the franchisee license agreement. And so Papa Kino's in Old Overland Park and in the Crossroads is changing to Buffalo State Pizza.
Yes.
I had it last week. It's basically the exact same order. Everything just has exact same menu. Mm-hmm. Everything just has a different name.
Okay.
And so quality is still there. I think they maybe added calzones, which I don't think the old Papa Kino's had. But Papa Kino's in Lawrence and Papa Kino's in Westport are staying Papa Kino's. But Buffalo State Pizza is coming to the Crossroads and downtown OP.
Wait, you said, Westport. Okay.
All Westport. Right.
So yeah. Buffalo State Pizza is coming to
Crossroads
and Old Overland Park.
Correct.
Okay.
But, you know, everything's got a new name, so you'll just have to learn what the new name is, and then you can have your same order. But similar things.
Yeah, I saw this, that many of in the lawsuit, that Papa Kino says it owns those social media accounts, and that's part of the lawsuit, too, so... many of the comments and or reviews specifically reference Papa Kino's. Defendants Icebox, Lechevin, and Robson are causing, who's Icebox?
I think it's the name of their company.
I thought Icebox from Little Giants was a franchisee for Papa Kino's.
She was in an adult movie.
Oh, boy.
Yep. Yeah. Icebox.
I did not. Mm-hmm. Did not need to know that.
Nope. You did not need to know that.
No one can unhear that. So let's wrap that up right there. That's openings and closings this week. Interview. We have a fun interview. Leslie Newsom this week. She is co-founder of the Antler Room. Over in, what is that, Hospital Hill area?
Hospital Hill, 25th and Holmes. Leslie knows more about food and more about chefs and more about the food scene than anyone we've had on this podcast.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting to hear her story of
opening her restaurant. Husband.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Nick.
Nick, yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
They've worked in the restaurant industry in New York, in San Francisco, in Denmark.
Yeah, Noma, if you've ever seen the documentary about that on Netflix.
Ever heard of it?
Like the most famous restaurant in the world, the number one rated restaurant in the entire world.
Yeah, behind Joe's KC and the Peanut. But yeah, they've been in all of those places, and then they came home, started the Antler Room in Kansas City, and it's just awesome to hear their perspective on why their menu is so weird.
Mm-hmm.
We get into a lot of that.
Yes. All right, today we are joined by our guest, Leslie Newsom, owner, co-founder of The Antler Room, a unique name, and I think that's kind of where I want to start, because I think there's a cool story behind a name that unique. Tell me about where The Antler Room came from.
It's such a bad story. It's not a cool story, but I'll just go with it. No, so when we were trying to come up with stuff, we did our first, we had a pop-up that was coming up, our very first one. We moved back in August, and it was the very end of August. So it was a...
It's like 2015 or 16?
That was in 2015.
Okay.
So it was really like crunch time, because we couldn't just call the pop-up the Leslie and Nick show as much as I wanted. So anyway, we wanted something that had some historical connection, something that you could easily say, easily remember. And it just, we were also kind of scouting places to rent or buy for a restaurant space. And the Antler, I think it was the Antler Lounge in the West Bottoms, that building was for sale. It was very much out of our price range. And I also wasn't ready to go be more of a, leader in the West Bottoms, as far as dining locations. And we found out that, so of course, with the history, Tom Pendergast, of course, hung out there. It eventually turned into a swingers club, which made it even more interesting, of course, in my eyes, because we wanted to do something with the dining scene
something
here.
Something swinger-ish.
Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly what you were saying. I was like, finish this sentence.
Keep it extra wild. No, but to keep it to where we could do whatever we wanted. And it kind of, I don't know what the right word, but just to keep things more fun, to keep it loose, to keep it interesting, we didn't want the traditional appetizer, entree, setup of a menu. And so, I don't know, and it, conveniently, Antler-themed things were very trendy at the time, so it just kind of all happened. And I wrote the Antler on a piece of paper, and Nick walked in the room, and he just wrote room on the end. I was like, okay, now we're a place, because now we're something, and it just kind of stuck, and we got too lazy to change it.
That was kind of a PG version, I think, of what the Antler Club or the Antler...
Yeah, Antler Club.
It
Antler,
was, yeah, I mean, jazz bands playing, people on stage swinging...
Swinging,
not dancing, swinging. I'm talking swinging with no clothes on, like and Pendergast, like that. That was a wild place. So
perfect. Yeah.
Doesn't get that wild here.
No,
still the food menu is wild.
For
me,
for Kansas City, it is.
Because I wrote down a menu item that you guys have up here: grilled octopus,
tostones,
pre. No, piri piri, avocado, hijiki, buffalo milk crema.
Yeah.
What the heck? I know what milk is, and I know what avocados are, and I know what an octopus is.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That's intimidating for someone walking into a restaurant and looking at the menu.
Yeah. We are so lucky. I knew where you were going.
Yeah. But I knew like two things on that menu, and I'm sure I would like it.
It's like the, you know, Kenan and Kel, like Good Burger. Have you ever seen that movie? Kel is like reading. He's like, Oh, I know some of these words. Like, that's how I feel reading your menu. It's like, I would have to Google almost every word on your menu.
Yeah. It's so great that the, we first of all have really amazing staff that really helps guide you, and they didn't start out knowing all of that stuff too. But what I really love is that from start to finish, you don't know what to expect. And therefore we can really blow your mind because you don't know. So we don't have a burger on the menu. Everyone knows what a burger tastes like. We don't have a steak on the menu. Everyone knows what that tastes like. So
you've
because
got Mangalasita pork tonkatsu.
Yes. That. So it's like but when you see it, it's a very specialty. It's like the Wagyu of pork.
Okay.
So a much more marbled with fattiness, but at the end of the day, it's a breaded, fried piece of pork.
And I'm sure, like, you know, 20, 25, 30 years ago, people looked at Wagyu beef and was like, what the hell does this mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not saying Kansas City is behind the times, but I'm sure this menu looks different from where you and Nick have been before, right?
Right.
So going back to the beginning, you said you moved here in 2015. You came from, you know, you yourself came from New York City, and then you and Nick in San Francisco. What about the Kansas City food scene makes it better than New York and San Francisco and stupid Denmark and other places like that? Well, first, I want to talk about your experience in New York City, because on your website, you list the chefs you worked for in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And you work for famous chefs in New York City. What is the pressure like? Because I've seen some of the, you know, shows, and it's dramatized on different documentaries and TV and whatnot. But what is the pressure like working for one of those chefs where they just name their restaurant, like their name or like one word, and everyone's like, oh, I know that place.
Yeah.
Like, what's the pressure like working there?
That's interesting, because I didn't feel as much pressure as probably Nick did.
Okay.
Because it was always my goal to do something greater than what I'm not type A personality. So, and neither is Nick. So this industry for us is actually just pushing ourselves and challenging ourselves in an area where we feel very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. We didn't ever want to become complacent, because that is ultimately what I think a lot of what makes the downfall of a lot of restaurants or places that think that they're great from day one. Mm-hmm.
And Town Topic's been doing the same thing for 90 years. So how dare you, first of all.
And I don't think that they think that they're great. I think that they are just doing their jobs, uh-huh. and they just have done it so consistently
mm-hmm.
for so
mm-hmm.
long, which is another thing. Consistency in your product that you're putting out mm-hmm. is so huge. But I when I worked at Room 39, I had talked to Ted and Howard. Hannah was the chef there.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what's next? I've graduated from college. I need to do something else. What do I do? And they both said, move to New York. And I was like, oh, okay. I guess I'll do this. Luckily, I had a boyfriend at the time that maybe had a little bit more money than I did mm-hmm. and could help, you know, get an apartment. so I could move there.
You're like, what is credit history?
Yeah. What is 3 months worth of rent for down payment?
Yeah.
I don't know, went on a whim, and I got a job working for Jean George's First Restaurant by the most crazy luck ever. I had gone there to that restaurant thinking that I knew someone through the grapevine. It turns out I did not. So it was very awkward. And I walked out of that dropping off my resume, and they come running out saying, wait, can you interview right now? And I was like, oh, yes. Because one of their servers had just fallen. They have a spiral staircase, had just fallen down the stairs and broken her ankle. So they literally needed someone mm-hmm. right then.
Yeah.
And I happened to answer all the wine questions and be there at the right time mm-hmm. and got hired. So yeah. I don't know how that would have ever happened.
Yeah. And then, so Nick had a different journey to New York City.
Yeah.
But, and we keep on saying Nick. Nick is the head chef here and owns it with you and your husband.
Yes.
And, but on your website, it just says Nick went to KU, then got accepted to the French Culinary School in New York City. I don't think you can just like apply to the French Culinary School.
I was thinking that, like, what was on his resume? That was so dang good.
Just like, yeah. Can I wasn't apply?
Yeah.
Can you I can. Apply?
Yeah, yeah. No,
like, but obviously, you know, he got accepted. He got to go work there, and then moved on to more and more places like San Francisco. And then I do want to talk about Denmark here in a bit. But what was Nick's, you know, kind of past that made him want to, one, apply there, and then two, like, how the hell did he get accepted?
Yeah. Well, so he actually, he went to KU, he got a political science degree and started working at the Capitol in Topeka and hated it. Mm-hmm. Just the whole politics of it, mm-hmm. You know, realized very quickly how, money influences lots of things. And he is one of those people you can ask. I could ask him like from day one how ISIS got formed, and he uh-huh. will draw a map for you. He knows the history of the world like the back of his hand. Mm-hmm. And it just really frustrated him. He wanted to see the political process, see how laws were made, see how that, and he saw all the opposite side mm-hmm. of it. So got really frustrated. His sister had just been going. She went to the French Culinary Institute as well in pastry and said, hey, you like to eat. Maybe you should think about going to culinary school. And
that's the qualifier.
Yeah. anyone can go. Mm-hmm.
It's like next time I'm in here, I'm going to walk up to the window and be like, hey, what are shokupan rolls and how did ISIS form?
Yes.
And I can get both those answers from the chef.
Correct.
It's also like saying,
very in depth.
Oh,
too.
You like to read? You can go to Harvard. You can read. Go to Harvard.
Yeah.
I think more people can get accepted than you know, because it's unfortunately way more expensive than it should be. Because when you get out, you do not make any correlated money to go along with those student loans, which we just paid off this year, which was really nice. Nick's. We paid off his.
Okay, just this.
But it's very cutthroat in New York, and I don't know. I guess if you compare it to like working in the industry in LA, you have lots of actors and people that it's their other job. It's not what they want to be doing. Where in New York, that is what they want to be doing, and so it's just a lot more serious. There's a lot more camaraderie, I think, with that. It's just there's a collective of people that are pushing to make things better, because like the very similar in produce and climate, you have to have technique behind things to make things taste good, because there's such harsh winters, there's not enough stuff, and I don't know, it was one of my favorite times in my life. Also I guess I make similar money now, but I definitely had no money, but had the most fun I've ever had. So I don't know. You get to see both sides of it.
And then also in your past, and I think this is just interesting. So again, Nick just applies to be an intern for Renee at Noma or Numa?
Noma.
Uh-huh. Noma in Denmark, probably the most famous restaurant in the entire world. Mm-hmm. What was that experience like? Because Renee, he's just a pretty normal guy, right? And are most chefs, like when they get to that level, are they all like that eccentric and that, I don't know, passionate, I guess? Or is Renee like a real outlier and that's what makes him?
No, all the ones, and not that I've met every famous chef in the world, but all the ones that I have come in contact with on that level are exactly the same. You have to be a little bit crazy to be in this industry, for one, because you don't make any money. So it's not something that's desirable for most people. But to be on that level, you have to be very eccentric. they take passion to a different level. Yeah. And it's where, I don't think that what we're doing is art, what they are doing is.
Yeah. Well, like I love the documentary where he's just like hunting in the forest for like mushrooms and truffles and stuff. It's like this guy's lost his mind.
Yeah. My sister works for Gucci, and Massimo Bottura is the chef for their restaurant there. And she was like, I just spent a day with him and his energy is insane.
Yeah. I can't imagine.
So did you get to eat at Noma? So, yes. I mean, this is the highest rated restaurant in the world. What was your meal?
Bone marrow with ants on it.
I've taken a shot of whiskey out of bone marrow. Do they do that there?
See, they don't.
Okay. But it's like it's like a 3-hour experience, right? 20 courses.
It's actually really fast. It's 20 courses. We did a lunch there, and Nick refused to get us a reservation because he was so nervous that my sister, two of her friends, and I all got up at 4 a.m., all on phones, iPads, everything else to try to get the reservation when they released them for mm-hmm. the month that we knew that we were going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it. So it is possible you can get in. But it was it was the most interesting meal that I had ever had. And I'm totally honest. I didn't love every single thing that came out, but everything was the most interesting, most unique flavor profiles mm-hmm. of anything that I had ever had to that point.
So you were, again, surprised by what you tasted?
Yes.
Usually that's a bad thing at a restaurant.
Not for me. I feel like,
okay, for me, an average eater, but I guess that's the things I expect to eat. If I bite into a right. burger and I'm like, whoa, that's not right.
Oh, no. No, but I'm saying
these are good surprises.
Yeah. Surprise in a positive way, okay. like a surprise birthday party way.
Okay.
happy moment.
So do you think that experience, you know, I'm sure everywhere you all went had some sort of influence on you. Was there one restaurant or one city that you lived in that you think influenced you the most and has the biggest influence on the Antler Room as it is today?
Everywhere that we go has some sort of influence. We take so much from everywhere. And
did you spend a good amount of time in Japan or anything like that? Because I feel like your menu.
We've been twice now. If I knew the language, I would want to move there. Uh-huh. I love it so much. But every time we take a trip, that's our biggest joy is going somewhere, discovering new things. Mm-hmm. And but I think overall, San Francisco was our biggest as far as just the overall restaurant mm-hmm. That we can take away. And I don't know. That was the place that we realized you did not have to have a traditional menu set up to be able to do to have something that
At the end of the day. The Chili's where it's like flaming apps like on your menu or
appetizers
it's just like one list of things. There's no different
Cheesecake Factory where it's 40 pages
there's nothing wrong with that.
No, we're going on Monday.
so when you came to Kansas City, obviously you knew you were going to compete but you're going to face the Kevins of Kansas City who are like, I know what I like, or I don't know what anything on your menu.
Yeah, it might be different than a San Francisco eater.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Might not have the same palates. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you were here, did you think, okay, we're going to have to balance, you know, what Kansas City knows and what we think of as fine cuisine, or like, this is why we're opening a restaurant because we want to make whatever the hell we want to make. Mm-hmm. And we want the menu to be what we want the menu to be, and people can adjust or not. Or did you find yourself like balancing and compromising more?
No. Okay. It was literally, we knew we're here all the time. For the first 2 years, we lived right behind the restaurant. This is us, and this is what we want. And Colby Geraltz from Blue Stem and Rye, he really said the greatest thing where he was like, you can cook for yourselves, you can cook for the critics, or you can cook for the people. Mm-hmm. And we chose us. So, and I joke that like, luckily that it's been okay. I think people, mm-hmm. luckily our palates must be somewhat in line with what people also think is good. But we didn't want to listen to anyone. I mean, if we listened to like my dad, for example, we would have never opened up a restaurant because mm-hmm. he looked at us like we were insane. And, you know, if we would have listened to a lot of critics in the beginning, we would have had a much simpler, more approachable menu. But then we would have been like every other restaurant. Mm-hmm. And then what's the point in that for us?
Yeah. And I think people come here now to try new things and to try something different. And so your role here, you're more in the front of the house. Mm-hmm. You're handling the bar. I feel like the bar programs and bars are getting just as experimental, or at least here, they are just as experimental as kind of the back of the house in the kitchen. What are we drinking right now? Because you were telling us what we were drinking. And I was like, I've never heard of anything like this. And it's good. You know, something I've never tried before, once again.
Yeah, so this is Piquette. So it's actually a traditional drink that they give to vineyard workers in other countries as their kind of reward after
shift,
a harvest.
Shift drink. Yes. Mm-hmm. Every bartender has a shift drink of some
sort. Yes, this is a vineyard worker shift drink. A little bit lower alcohol, but it's after the first pressing of the wine. It's the juice that comes off of that. But this is interesting because it's a local vineyard just up north called Fence Style. And they've been experimenting a lot with different things. And Shreedy, the winemaker, she kind of, they approached me about, should they do this? And like always down for, yeah, do whatever you think is great. Mm-hmm. There's not
make
many
wine
on the market.
For yourself.
Yeah, make wine for yourself, and then I hope it's good because then I'll buy it. So I just literally got a case. They released it on was Saturday. So
me and Kevin are some
you
of the first
are,
people. To drink.
Oh, wow!
Other than Nick and me, like a couple staff here. Yes, you are.
This is why we do
first,
this.
Yeah,
this is why we do this. Okay, but I have another menu item.
Yes,
on the bar side.
Uh-huh.
Mezcal, Kochi Americano, green chartreuse, orange bitters.
Mm-hmm.
I think I know what bitters are. But how do you, again, like come up with these combinations? Are they just trial and error? When I see a drink like that I've never seen before, how did you come up with it? And then how do you sell it?
So that actually, while most of the drinks are mine, that drink was actually Drew, one of our bartenders. Mm-hmm. And it's a twist on a last word, which is a classic cocktail with maraschino liqueur. So it's kind of, the twist is that we added mezcal, and he is obsessed with every agave mm-hmm. spirit. Well, the two in the market. But most of the time that I'm making drinks, it's some byproduct from the kitchen.
Okay.
Or something that they have a lot of from a dish that is not on the menu anymore. Mm-hmm. So like if you see, there's one, Urfa pepper syrup. I'm going to be using, there's a bunch of different stuff. I always just try to play with and experiment, and sometimes it doesn't work and I'll trash the idea. And then sometimes I'll wake up and think, oh wait, I can do this and this will be great. Like one of our cooks, she's been making bitters, and that one of the bitters, it ended up becoming super savory and it was really terrible in all of my ideas. And mm-hmm. then it took me 6 months and then I thought of something. And so now it's in a drink on the menu, but I don't know. We just kind of, I'm very simple, and I mm-hmm. want things that you can easily produce, because I don't ever want you to have to wait 10 minutes for your drink, because right. I also would like to make money.
Yeah.
So I want people drinking really
wait,
fast.
Wait, so you're telling me the more people drink, the more money they give you? Okay. Interesting concept there.
Most of these cocktails then on your menu, they're mm-hmm. going to be unique to the Antler Room, or?
Yes and no.
Or at least your own twist on.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. They're definitely, I or the other bartenders have come up with them and we play with ideas. But most of them are either kind of slight riffs on a classic cocktail mm-hmm. or something that I'm excited about and I want to use. We have this, this Lambrusco that came in the market a few months ago, and if you start paying attention, you'll see it everywhere now because everyone is super into it. It's a really balanced one. Mm-hmm. And I want to use it in everything. So I have it on by the glass and I put it in a cocktail just because I love it so much. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. And then I get bored. Like there's one cocktail that's never left the menu. I took it off for a little while and then I put it back on because I retasted it and I was like, no, this is staying. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Most of it, I get bored. And I get tired of looking at it or making it, and then I take it off and change it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I feel like you.
Do you want to go?
Yeah, I'll go.
I have a wine question because you seem to know a lot about wine too. If I am trying to sound smart,
mm-hmm.
and I'll tell
but he
you,
doesn't
the words,
want to learn. He just wants to sound
I'll,
smart.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I do know. Let's say I taste a wine that is very fruity.
Uh-huh.
What's a more elegant way to describe it than this is fruity?
That's good. Yeah.
Okay. That's on point.
No, I always, I don't have any somderies. I don't have any of that. I say I just like to drink them and taste them. And at the end of the day, either you like it or you don't. And I don't, I'm not one that's like, no, I cannot believe you didn't say green peppercorn versus tree bark
fresh
or whatever.
Tennis balls.
Oh, yeah. So what are those? Then the people who do say those things, what do they say? I want to be like them.
No, you don't.
Oh, there's tree bark? there's way too much tree bark in this.
Joke of the oaky afterbirth.
Oaky afterbirth. I've heard oaky afterbirth. That's a whole new one.
You don't want that.
Okay.
There are words where it's like some people think of fruit and they talk about it as sweet. Like we get a lot of guests that say, I don't want a sweet red wine. Mm-hmm. And I have to know that they're talking about either they want fruity or they don't want fruity. It's not that it's just it's mm-hmm. not sweet. Like there are very few sweet red wines and they're
I like, I don't know how to describe the red wine that I like, but it's like moldy. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean,
moldy.
I don't know. For some reason,
beer between Amyases.
I think that's the oak.
Sometimes it might mean that it's corked and usually.
Okay. I like old red wine that I like opened 3 weeks ago and forgot and it was sitting in my fridge. that's it. But okay. So we talked a lot about like your menu, your drinks, everything's a bit of a, you guys are doing things your way, doing things a little bit different. I think also this location on Hospital Hill, 25th and Holmes, is a bit of a unique spot. You know, it's not surrounded by other restaurants really, or in, you know, the popular nice restaurant areas. What made you guys pick this location?
Because of all those reasons you just said.
You got to be different, don't you? Don't you?
We found it was close enough to everything and also just slightly off the beaten path that...
It's a perfect little analogy there. Metaphor? Analogy.
Mm-hmm. It. We looked at a lot of different spaces and the rent was right. We actually wanted it smaller than what this is. And then when we did our performa and everything, realized, remember, it's a business at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. We need just a few more seats to mm-hmm. get us in the positive direction. A girl that she actually was a part-time hostess, but she owns a salon down the street, and she approached us about this spot opening up, and we got really excited. And the landlord was very discerning about who she wanted in that spot, which kind of made us even happier. Like, okay, if we get this, then we're really in. She really likes us. I don't know. It just, you know, when it just kind of feels right, there's enough people that walk in this neighborhood. This neighborhood got so much going on, lots of change happening. We were noticing lots of kind of younger people moving in. And the Teocalli has been open here for now almost, I think, 12 years.
Mm-hmm. Succotash right down the street.
Yes. And I don't know, it was a quiet enough, but still enough action going on in addition to ambulances from the hospital and stuff, you know, go by. But, and then conveniently, she also had an apartment come up for rent that was directly behind. So it kind of all helped in that whole aspect.
If the apartment was above the restaurant, that's even more like, I don't know, working class, griming, working all the time.
Yeah. We talked about living upstairs because we do have a private dining room space and a prep kitchen upstairs. And it just, we already smell like food all the time. I kind of didn't want everything to smell like that. But living behind it was enough. We wake up every morning and then see the restaurant. And we definitely used it as an extension of, oh, you want coffee? Hold on, I'll be right back. Mm-hmm. Oh, you want some wine? Hold on, we'll be right back. So now we don't have that as much anymore. But Mm-hmm. We're only 7 minutes away, so it's not too bad.
And then we were talking earlier, you have a couple fun events coming up here this spring too at the Antler Room, right?
Yes. So our fourth Izakaya dinner is coming up.
Izakaya.
Yes.
Okay. What is that?
So Japanese late night dinner is basically, so what they eat after they've been drinking after a really stressful day.
Mm-hmm. So not Papa John's or my go-to is Town Topic.
I mean, yeah.
We go to Poncho's a lot also.
Oh yeah, 24 hours. Uh-huh.
Yeah, kind of can't beat that.
Avocado sauce.
Mm-hmm. The
spicy green avocado sauce there?
Oh, at Poncho's?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, with your breakfast burrito. It is so good.
World class.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like a little spicy, I don't know, they call it an avocado sauce.
Yeah, it's
like
at San Antonio's, that spicy avocado
it's
one.
It's kind of similar. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that dinner is like a traditional Japanese
late night food.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So we do it from 8:30 to 1 a.m. on March 31st. And we're doing, since this is our fourth one, we've done three before this, we're doing kind of our best of greatest hits menu items. So I'm really excited about that because there have been lots of people that have come. Most of the people that come usually come to everyone and they've been asking about certain dishes a lot, so we get to do that.
What's the most popular one that you think you'll serve?
I mean, we always sell out of the dumplings, the skewers. Always some sort of skewers that we sell out of, but we always do some sort of, in Japan, they call them sandos, where it's the shokupan that you're talking about, the Japanese milk bread. So it's kind of like a brioche with some sort of, usually it's some sort of fried filling, whether it's fish or pork or beef or whatever. So the one that people love the most, we did a fried fish one. It's like upgraded, what's that, McDonald's
Filet-O-Fish.
Yeah.
Can't upgrade. I mean, that bad news for you.
Bread, fried fish, bread
sounds like Filet-O-Fish
and
to me.
Mayo-y tartary sauce and some cabbage and
awesome.
Well, imagine that with good fish and stuff.
You got the late night dinner.
Yes.
And then did you have another one too?
We have our wine dinner with on April 15th with Forlorn Hope and Division, and both of the winemakers who are very good friends, they're gonna come and create some ruckus here. I think they both have so many incredible wines that I think I'm gonna do probably some sort of competition between the two. And that usually ends up being pretty fun. I did that on one other dinner when we had two winemakers named Andrew.
Like a drinking competition?
Yeah, just like put them in the middle and they just fist fight.
That would have been no good. Andrew Jones is like 6'5", and Andrew Major is like 5'2". So it would not have been a good...
not a fair fight.
No.
But in a drink-off, you know, who knows? They're both winemakers.
Yes.
One, you know, probably equal playing field there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's all the questions I have.
That's all I got.
Okay. You have any questions? How do we do?
Really great.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Leslie Newsom, owner and co-founder of the Antler Room.
Thank you.
All right. So thanks again to Leslie for joining us. I just like that she was okay with how much, like, I wasn't okay with the menu and like how many questions I had, like, why would you put all those things together? Like saying that to her face. Mm-hmm.
And we talked
about
it.
But it was like out of genuine curiosity. Yeah. Like, how do you come up with that crazy of a menu, whether it be the drinks or the food?
Yeah. Cause that's what they're called.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like cause we were talking to her afterwards and she was just like, yeah, the reason why we put that on the menu is because that's what it's called. Like at the end of the day, is it a fried pork tenderloin?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, but the way they fried it, it's called whatever, this fancy word. But yeah, we got to talk to her a little bit after, drink a little bit more of that staff wine or just like wine staff wine.
Yeah. Well, for the staff. Mm-hmm. Very good though.
Which was good.
Yes. So thanks again to Leslie for joining us.
If you haven't gone down there,
yes,
go to the Antler Room.
Go to the events we talked about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The wine dinners and
And the late night Japanese food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sounds really good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So next, we're going to move into a little what did we try this week? You want to go first?
Sure.
Okay.
Because I tried something really yummy. Went to Fox and Pearl.
That yummy yum?
Oh, by the way, I can't do that song.
Oh, I thought you liked it.
No.
Okay.
I hate it.
Well, I didn't know where you could have gone one or two.
It's
ways.
Very on brand for me to to hate that song, but yeah.
It's catchy. It. You like it.
No, I don't.
Okay.
The Fox and Pearl down on the west side. Mm-hmm. It's on Summit and basically Southwest Boulevard.
About it when it opened up.
Yeah.
Come full circle.
So it is like, yeah, you might find this shocking. It's a farm-to-table restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
But they've got a wood fire grill that they cook everything on. And I had some things that I'd never had before, and it was really good. So if you
what
go
are those
there,
things you've never had before.
If you go there, you have to get the faux gras sausage, okay, which is sausage made out of, I think, pig liver.
Oh.
It is unbelievable. Ugh. It is so good.
Pig liver.
And then I had the pork chop, pig again. Pork chop was different than pretty much any other pork chop I've ever had. So definitely worth a shot down there. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
I heard you can get a whole fried chicken there. Like, they just probably deliver you the whole chicken deep fried for like $50 or $60 to split. Mm. Pretty good deal.
Also, you can get a whole chicken at Costco for $4.99.
Yeah, but deep fried, like real fried chicken.
That, no, but yeah, Fox and Pearl on the west side. It's a delicious American kind of Southern comfort, but like fancy Southern comfort food. Obviously, if you're having pig liver stuffed in a sausage, you're doing something right.
I tried Cafe Bar and Grill. No, wait. Cafe Grill and Bakery.
Okay.
Yes, it's O exclamation point. That's why I said it that way.
Got it. Thank you.
Over off Gillum and O Cafe Grill and Bakery. It's got like in the name, so bakery, so you can go in there and get all like pastries, breakfast bars, all that.
Was there like Cafe Europa there before?
No, this is like under the Union Hill apartment complex.
Yeah,
over there.
I don't know.
It's across the street from Filling Station.
Okay.
But really good pastries they got going there. Then you can get smoothies, like as healthy as you want, protein smoothie, all the way to like ice cream and booze smoothies. And then ice cream by the scoop as well. So all that's going on.
Is it like gelato?
No.
Or just ice cream?
It was Belafonte ice cream, I asked. So they got all of that going on. Smoothies, shakes, ice cream, pastries. And then on the other side of the restaurant, they've got a grill where they've got like hot sandwiches, burgers, fries, everything.
So really is it good. Like breakfast, lunch, and dinner, or just breakfast and lunch?
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Huh. Yeah. So really good.
Oh.
It's funny. The guy described it as, we're like a neighborhood, bar and grill, like Applebee's. I was like, maybe not the best comparison to make.
When is the $1 Long Island iced tea night?
Yeah.
That's what you should have asked.
There is booze, a full bar there, too.
Yeah.
Well, it hadn't opened yet, but it will. So, Cafe, Grill, and Bakery.
Okay.
Would recommend it. So, that's what we tried this week. Next, we've got a What's Good in the Neighborhood. Again, these are times where we look for different things going on around the neighborhood in Kansas City. So these may come to us from like the Nextdoor app, neighborhood Facebook groups. This one comes to us from the Kansas City Reddit.
Most of them come from the Kansas City Reddit.
They're starting to, yeah. There's a trend. Here it is. Afternoon. I think this has been asked before, but I cannot seem to find anything in the search results. Are there any sort of groups or activities in the area that an aspiring nudist / naturist could attend when visiting the area?
Oh, so they don't even live here.
Nope.
A nudist visiting.
Yes. I've long been a closet nudist, taking whatever free time I can at home or at the lake to be without clothing. But this is an activity not supported by my family, nor is it something that I think my kids would appreciate.
You got kids? You can't be a nudist and have kids. You can't do both.
My wife has zero interest in participating. We have discussed many times.
Dude, you don't fit in how your
did
you family.
Get married?
You don't. What, you're not.
Yeah. But it has become something that feels important and very liberating to me, and I'm tired of having my few times only be when nobody is around. Are there any sort of groups, locations, or activities in the area that anyone is aware of where I can explore this a little more to see if this is something I might be enjoy exploring more, or at least where I find out it's too terrifying for me, so I try once. So that's the question he puts out there.
Okay.
Top answer. A lot of old dudes in my Planet Fitness locker room who seem to be naked an awful lot. Maybe give that a try.
Yeah, I was going to say, go to the Y.
Yeah.
And
it's the next comment. The Y is very much the same.
Yeah, and just as long as you're blow-drying your balls, like you're fine. Mm-hmm. But if you just start lingering around and trying mm-hmm. to do activities while nude, you're going to get some questions.
Yeah, but there is a campground about 20 miles southwest of Leavenworth called Gaia, G-A-E-A, Gaia? Gaia? Retreat.
It's like, gay? Yeah?
Gaia? So I found this because a lot of answers, started leading to this, which is a retreat center that is providing a recreational retreat in a natural setting for the purpose of cultural and spiritual education.
Mm.
So, on the FAQs, first question, is this a nudist colony?
That's the FAQs on this Gaia's website?
Yeah. So, the answer, no. Gaia is designed as a recreational retreat center for the purpose of cultural and spiritual education. As such, the camp promotes tolerance, acceptance, and respect between groups and individuals. We neither promote nor discourage nudity.
Nor discourage
nudity, as it is a personal and spiritual choice.
That sounds like a yes.
That it sounds like if your answer is not a, if it's no, but you're a nudist.
That reminds
you're
me
a
of
nudist
a,
retreat.
The last time nudist was in pop culture, nudism, I think was Zootopia.
Oh,
when they go to that nudist, we're all natural. Yeah. That's the last thing I can think of, man. Like nudist being in pop culture.
Yeah, Seinfeld before that.
That's, oh, yeah. That's so it. Two times in the last 30 years.
That's it. Gaia Campground. It's about southwest of Leavenworth, about 20 miles. Nudist? Optional.
Don't discourage it.
It's not discouraged. So that is what's good in the neighborhood this week. Thank you, Reddit. You are undefeated. Continue to stay undefeated. Dan. Are you going to get a second home in St. Louis?
I know.
You were there again.
Yeah. So this is...
say something nice about St.
Louis.
This
is our segment, Say Something Nice About St. Louis. We started this because they're
My girlfriend lives in St. Louis.
Yeah. In a city in the Midwest. So let's say something nice about it.
Okay.
So here's me saying something nice about St. Louis. Columbia is on the way to St. Louis.
Okay.
So I got to stop in Columbia on my way to St. Louis and eat Booch's burgers.
Okay.
So that was nice mm-hmm. about the trip to St. Louis. Also, everything is in a strip mall. So there's a lot of parking. There's not a lot of like street parking and parallel parking. It's like every restaurant, everything you need. There's a nice big strip mall with a nice huge parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
So plenty of parking, which is nice.
Yeah, that was really nice.
Yeah.
That was really nice.
There you go.
I didn't think you were going to say anything about St. Louis, and then you did.
Yeah.
Continue to surprise me. That was very nice of you. All right. So that is, he said something nice about St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So now it's time to move into the mixed plate, and it's March. We're doing a bracket.
This is March.
We're doing a bracket for best bar in Kansas City. So we're going to talk March Madness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Best March Madness memories.
March Madness starts basketball. This week, and it doesn't stop until April 3rd? April 6th.
Yes.
And so I don't watch a ton of college basketball. Mm-hmm. My team, Mizzou, has a troubled history with college basketball.
Yep.
But this is the time of year where I do watch a lot of college basketball because it's all awesome.
Mm-hmm.
What game did I watch? San Diego State game over the weekend.
Yeah.
It was awesome. Mm-hmm. And, I watched whatever.
March
so,
Madness.
This is not an original thought, but March Madness is awesome.
I think it's your turn.
Oh, nice. Okay. You're up first. So we're doing our favorite, our mixed plate of best, most important or impactful March Madness memories.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My number one is...
Meet number one,
mixed plate. I'm going Mizzou beating Memphis in the Sweet 16
to go to the Elite Eight.
Marcus Dinman made a three-quarter of the court shot at halftime. The best part about this, I was in Lawrence because we were on spring break, but KU was not. So I was in Lawrence for that game. Mizzou played right before KU. Mizzou beat Memphis. KU lost to Michigan State later that night, and I was in Lawrence to rub it in all their stupid faces. So I remember that night. It was a great, great night, and my last good memory of Mizzou basketball.
It's okay. That was just a few years ago, right?
It was like 2011 or 10. 11.
All right. My meet number one, March Madness. I got to go with... the Jacob Pullen, Danny Clemente versus Xavier double overtime game. I think it was, I don't even remember what round it was. I think it was maybe the second round or Sweet 16. I can't remember. But anyways, Pullen went off, double overtime, Gus Johnson on the call.
Oh,
with
he's in shape.
He just wasn't even talking basketball. He was just grunting by the end of the game in double overtime. One of my favorite experiences ever watching a college basketball game.
We need Gus back.
We need him back.
Back in the mic. All right. My meet number two for favorite March Madness memories is KU losing to Michigan.
Michigan State. Michigan.
Okay. The Trey Burke game.
Oh, yeah.
I think this was 2013. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think he had like 12 points in the last 2 minutes or something. He was just... unconscious from three. I think that was the Final Four in 2000. Yeah, that was the Final Four game in 2013 or 14. Trey Burke was my favorite player in college basketball for a little bit. So before all you KU people, yes, I know that my best memories are KU losing, but this is the reality as a Mizzou basketball fan, so I'm not ashamed of it. It's who I am.
Mm-hmm. I've got K-State's Elite Eight run last year.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Bruce Weber, good coach.
Bruce Weber, great coach. I mean, he's only made it out of the first round, I think, once.
Okay.
Or twice, and that was it right there. He's famous for losing in the first round, but great coach. We did it without Dean Wade for most of it, our best player. Barry Brown went off. We beat Kentucky. We got lucky because the number one overall seed in the tournament got upset by a 16 team. But, hey.
That was 2 years ago then.
2 years ago?
Yeah, because Virginia won it all last year.
Okay. Well, That time. That's my meet number two. What okay.
All right. My side number one mixed plate of favorite March memories is Mizzou winning the Big 12 tournament.
Yes, on the way
out. Last year they were in the Big 12.
That was good.
I think we beat Baylor. I was upset because KU, we needed a rubber match. Because both games that year were just insane. Mm-hmm. The second game, the last game we ever played against them, Mizzou was up 19 at half and ended up losing that game in Lawrence.
Yeah.
But we did win.
By Thomas Robinson.
Oh, right? Got hammered. But we did win the Big 12 tournament going out. Kim English, Marcus Dinman, Phil Pressey, Flip Pressey. That was an awesome team.
Yeah, and then you got a 2 seed in the tournament.
Easy, bud. Easy. Mizzou won. I was at Power and Light watching the game, one of my buddies ran up on stage and got thrown out as soon as he got on stage.
Worth it.
Yeah, totally worth it.
All right, my side number one, March Madness memories. I'm going to go with K-State losing to LaSalle in the first round in 2013. Bruce had just won his first of two Big 12 championships. That's right, he's got two. That's the second most of any active coach in the Big 12 right now. Just a little bit of room between him and Bill Self on that list. But I was on my deathbed in Panama City, the most hungover I've ever been, and I just needed someone to put me out of my misery, and Bruce and the Cats did that.
Mm-hmm.
They lost, and I was just like, all right, well, this day's over. Mm-hmm. I can be done. I can be done with today.
Uh-huh.
And I think I slept for like 13 hours after that.
Yeah.
So
that's
put me out of my misery. It was nice of them.
That's good. Mm-hmm. So for my side number two, I was thinking about going that route,
mm-hmm.
the same route, but I'm not going to. I'm going to take the high road.
Norfolk steak.
Yeah, I was just thinking about it. I'm going to take the high road and say 2005,
mm-hmm.
KU losing to the Bucknell Bison.
Yeah, that was...
This was right when I was like really getting into my Mizzou fandom. Mm-hmm. I'd always hated KU. Like that was always within me. But I was kind of a K-State fan like until like eighth grade or freshman year. And so I was kind of just now becoming a Mizzou fan. Just that's where I wanted to go for college. I was a junior in high school or sophomore. And KU lost to Bucknell. I immediately got a Bucknell Bison t-shirt.
Yeah, that was like the first time that became a thing, mm-hmm. getting that
whoever beat KU. Yeah. Yeah. And so KU losing to Bucknell 64-63 in 2005. Loved it.
All right, I got my side number two here, and folks, if you're driving, buckle up, put your seatbelt on, maybe pull over.
Okay.
Maybe pull over to the side of the road, because my meet number two is KU winning the national championship. This was 2008. I was a big KU fan.
Oh God! It was the first bless time America. I'd
ever seen one of my teams win a national championship.
Oh.
I had to watch the game by myself in the basement because no one in my family would watch with me. But I was a KU fan back in 2008. Watched it, cheered for them to beat Memphis. It was awesome. I remember having a ton of fun. And what a memory.
What a loser.
I mean, by the following fall, I think I was a freshman or maybe two falls later, I was a freshman at K-State. And I was chanting, fuck KU in the student section. So.
Sandstorm style?
Yeah, yeah. So it switched very quickly, but mm-hmm. I was a diehard KU fan back in the day. I'll tell the people about it.
I'll be honest.
I was pumped.
I kind of forgot about that until now.
People definitely won't forget.
Yeah. It's so. Like your Mahomes. Do you have any? Oh, too bad Twitter wasn't around back then.
I know. Yeah.
Dang it. You'd have some good
hashtag KU B-ball.
Yeah.
It's like not sarcastic tweets.
Oh.
Yeah.
I left off Norfolk State because, again, just put me, it was like St. Patrick's Day or something mm-hmm. like that. It was the Thursday or Friday before St. Patrick's Day. I was watching that Norfolk State game. I just left the bar, went and got a bottle of gin, and got to forget about. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to care about Mizzou anymore. Yeah. I didn't have to care. It just put me out of my misery.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for the mixed plate this week. I don't really have any other ones because K-State usually loses in the first round.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. if we make it. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm a believer in Bruce. He's building a program there.
Program.
Building a program. So that's it for this week. Again, hopefully, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, I will be at the Blue Line for happy hour with the Mavericks players. Also, the next Wednesday, the 18th, come see us at Kelly's for Meat Bingo. And then get ready for the brackets, the brackets, and the brackets.
Mm-hmm.
Best bar in Kansas City. Be sure to vote, tell a friend, share it on social media. I want as many people to vote on this as possible. First round has already started and will go till Friday. And the second round will start Friday and go till next Monday. And we'll have the results then. So
we'll tweet out results after. Oh, yeah. Well, you'll know because you'll be voting.
But yeah, you'll want to stay tuned to the podcast too during all mm-hmm. of this too. We'll have exclusive content on the podcast.
Maybe some insight into the committee committee the algorithm. Insight. Yeah.
Yeah, again, it's 80% algorithm, 20% human.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that's it for this week. Thanks for listening. Be sure to follow us on social media at State Your Line. What do we got next week?
Next week, we have the CEO of the Kansas City Port Authority, Port KC, mm-hmm. John Stevens.
Yes.
So they are in charge of the port.
The port.
And
a lot of development.
A lot of development.
And all over Kansas City. So be sure to listen to that. We'll see you around Kansas City.